White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 281. Welcome to Open Wheel, the White Rocket Formula One and IndyCar podcast, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment and by people like you via Patreon.com. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined by my regular co-host for this program, pulp author extraordinaire and all sorts of racing enthusiast, as I have dubbed you, Alan. Alan J. Porter, welcome back aboard the show, Alan.
Thank you, Van. It's always great to be on the podcast with you, and always fun to talk Formula One and IndyCar. Looking forward to it. I think we've got a lot to talk about this evening.
We have a lot. Yeah, it's always great to have you. I am so glad to have somebody that I can lean on and can actually know what's going on when I'm clueless, because I love this stuff. I've watched IndyCar on and off my entire life, back to the old days of Gordon Johncock and Johnny Rutherford and A.J. Foyt and the Unsers and all that. But Formula One, I'm only in my second season, so it's really good to have you kind of propping me up as we as we go through this wonderful world of Formula One. And yeah, for those that out there listening, we Alan suggested today, you know, we might want to do a show, and I'm like, holy cow! There have been four Formula One races and six IndyCar races since last we spoke. And so, Alan, I was going to tell you that one of my favorite things about our show is looking at the different races, looking back at them, and trying to remember, you know, because I know it'll all come back to me once we start talking about it. But right now it doesn't. But it'll all come. It's just fun to have all the memories come back, all the fun and exciting moments of each race. So once we start digging into them a little bit, I'll be remembering pretty much everything, I'm sure, everything that I want to remember.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, one of the things is I was sort of driving home tonight and thinking about what we were going to do, and I was trying to remember, you know, what incident was from what race.
Yeah.
You know, was that Canada? Was it Baku's easy to remember because that was just crazy.
That's great.
But, you know, was it Canada? Was it Austria? You know, was that the IndyCar race? Was that Texas? I don't know. You know, I'm sure as you're quite right. As we go through the memories will start popping back up. We ask for some forgiveness. With 10 races to cover, we may get the wrong thing in the wrong race at some point, I'm sure.
We very well may. But we can pull up. I have the reports for the Formula One. Let me check. I've got IndyCar and Formula One in front of me here. I can definitely pull up reports for Formula One. We'll see about Indy. Before we get going, though, just a real quick network note for our listeners that want to keep track of where to find everything. We are the White Rocket Entertainment Network now, and so all these shows are coming at you through the White Rocket feed. So if you go to iTunes, and subscribe to White Rocket Entertainment Network, you'll be able to hear this show every time we put one out. We also do the James Bond podcast on Her Majesty. We got to get you on there sometime, Alan, for the On Her Majesty Secret podcast. You're a Bond fan, aren't you?
That's putting it mildly, yeah.
Yeah, okay. We'll have to get you on there sometime. I'm sure you'd enjoy yourself with the rest of us. And we have shows about everything else, too. So just subscribe to White Rocket Entertainment if you haven't already. And go leave a review, and a rating will help us to attract new listeners and help the show to grow and all that good stuff. And by the way, we are no longer part of the Earth Station One network, and so we now depend entirely on our existing audience spreading the word. We no longer have Earth Station One out there drumming up listeners for us. It's a perfectly amicable split, but they've gone their way, we've gone ours, because we have our own network now. We don't need to be part of somebody else's, but we want to make sure our listeners, you know, spread the word that we have really cool shows, if you think so, and that people should tune in and listen to them. So please help us out in that way. And of course, go to patreon.com to help support the show financially. We would always, just for a dollar a month, as little as a dollar a month, you can help keep our shows on the air at patreon.com/Van Allen Plexico. Okay, let's get into the races. I guess we can do Formula One first, take a break, and then zip through in slightly lesser intensive form, the IndyCar. After Monaco, Formula One came over to Canada. And I believe that is in Montreal, is that correct?
That's correct. It's on the island in the middle of the St. Lawrence Seaway in Montreal, the Circuit Gilles Villeneuve.
So
named after the great Canadian driver.
Yeah, that was interesting, catching a lot of the history there about Villeneuve and the whole the name of the race, the track, and everything. That's where they had, I believe that's the track where they have the wall of champions or something that people hit.
Yeah. Pretty much every world champion has crashed into that particular wall. There's about 10 feet of the wall there where they, if they come out one of the corners a little too fast, you clip that wall, and pretty much every world champion has bent a wheel on that wall at some point in their career.
That's hilarious. It's not quite as egregious of a corner as the one at Baku that we're going to get to, because Baku runs you down a couple of alleys, let's be honest. I mean,
yeah.
There's a couple of
back alleys, and you get mugged on the way out.
I was going to say, there's a couple of alleys on that Baku course. I was expecting Batman to be fighting somebody as they drove by. That's just weird. But it is, yeah, you come around that corner, you kind of slide out and smack the wall as you go around. That's at Canada. So, Canada, let's see. This is one of those where you had Lewis Hamilton on the pole, Lewis Hamilton fastest lap, and Lewis Hamilton winning. The Canadian race, though, is not terribly memorable to me. I'm going to have to go to the report for it. What do you remember that race first, and then we'll kind of go through it and talk about it?
If I remember rightly, that was one where Verstappen had a really magic start and was actually running. Was he running second?
And
then he had the first of his another in his series of ongoing failures, but was heading really well. But there's not a lot I remember other than the Canadian kid Lance Stroll, who sort of scored his first points.
Yes.
Yeah. And then there was the fight between the two Force Indias when they wouldn't give them team orders.
which laid
the foundation for the a few fun things later on in the other races.
But, yes, it does.
Yeah, it was like Ocon was faster than Perez and wanted to get past him,
and he wouldn't let him by.
He's like, geez, just let us race. And then they almost took each other out, and I think basically threw away certainly I think the chance to get at least one of them on the podium. So,
yeah, and it's only going to get worse along those lines as we go along, because at Baku, they could have won. I mean, well, let me back up. At Baku, almost everybody could have won.
That's probably a reasonable assumption, yeah.
Baku is the first Formula One race I've ever watched in my life where almost every driver legitimately had a chance to win at some point. That's almost never true, is it? That's almost never true.
It is true that it's never true, yeah.
But it was almost true this time.
Yeah. But I'm just going back to Canada, I don't think it was a particularly memorable race. Canadian races are always best when it rains.
Mm-hmm.
You get really good races there. But the main thing that Canada tends to be, which we didn't really get this time, but sometimes the wildlife gets on the track there. There's been incidents of groundhogs running across, and I think it was last year or the year before, Vettel was basically radioed in that he missed a seagull, and everybody thought he was making it up. And when they did the replay, slow motion replay, he actually literally had to drive around a seagull that was just sat in the middle of the track. this year there wasn't really much going on, I think, other than there was Carlos Sainz, wasn't there? He tagged Grosjean at the beginning, and ended up spinning across the track and speared Massa.
The Canadian race itself wasn't that memorable, but there were a few incidents within it that kind of stand out. I just didn't remember they were at Canada. So, well, the couple of things I want to talk about out of that now. One is the thing that jumps out at me about that race, other than Hamilton finally winning and getting things going, is that This was a race where the Red Bulls were something of a story. One was because Verstappen out-qualified Ricciardo, as usual, I believe. Let me check and see. Verstappen qualified fifth. Ricciardo was sixth. As I always say, when their cars are equal, Max usually does a little bit better than Ricciardo. Ricciardo's been sort of sneaky good this season, though. Ricciardo is ahead of Max in points for one reason, I would argue, and one reason only, which is that Ricciardo's car, while it has broken down some, has not broken down as often as Max. And so I wanted to get your reaction to this. I've been comparing Ricciardo this season to like the bench basketball player that comes in late in the game and gets a bunch of points because he happens to just be standing under the goal and gets all the rebounds and putbacks.
If I understood that sport correctly, I would probably be able to. That meant nothing to me.
Okay, well, what I'm saying is that Ricciardo has just kind of been plugging away, not doing anything spectacular, yeah. And it just kind of lands in his lap because his car doesn't explode. Whereas Max will come out and do something spectacular, and then his car will die.
Yeah, I mean, Ricciardo can really drive. I mean, he is one of the top drivers. He drives really well, I think, as we proved it, and we'll get to it, the British Grand Prix, where he came from the back and was outstanding. But he's one of those guys who manages to get himself in a position that when things go wrong for others, he's there to capitalize on it and take opportunities. And he gains points by keeping his head down. And I did hear an interesting discussion on one of the other F1 podcasts a couple of days ago around the fact that, you know, does Max just push the car that, you know, 1 or 2% harder than Ricciardo? Mm. That means that, you know, if anything is fragile, it's going to break on his car. Mm. And, you know, Ricciardo sort of is pushing the car to its limit, but maybe not over its limit, while Max Verstappen is maybe just pushing it that 1 or 2% over the limit and really exposing anything that's fragile, which is, an interesting thought. So, Ricciardo's, I was going to say, he's not slow and steady, but he's steady and he's got great racecraft and he can read the race really well. And he basically, what did they say? Luck is a combination of hard work and opportunity, and right. He does both of those. Yeah. He works hard and he gives himself the opportunity to capitalize on others' misfortunes, and slowly but surely is working his way up the points.
Yeah, he went through a run there where I think it was 5 podiums in a row, and he'd actually gotten more points than any other driver over those several races. He only won like one of them, but he was on the podium 5 straight races and just got a bunch of points.
He does a great job of that.
And what that meant, the other thing I wanted to mention about this, what that meant was that quite a few celebrities got to drink champagne out of his shoe. And that's just become a thing now.
I mean, that's fair enough when he wins, but when he's just on the podium for third, I think that's pushing it a little bit. But I think it'll be next drink out of my shoe because I turned up for work. You know, it's getting a bit ridiculous. But,
well, to be fair, there's two things. One is that a couple of the celebrities wanted to do it. They wanted to be part of the thing, and he's like, "Oh, okay." You know, he didn't suggest it. Now that was part of it. Another part of it, though, is that when he did finish third in one of the races, and we're going to get to it, but in one of the races he finished a third that felt like a win because he had Lewis Hamilton breathing down his neck for like 5 last laps, and he somehow held him off in an inferior car. And so he was more excited to get third in that race than I think he was to win the other one.
Yeah, very much so. Did you notice that Bottas very clearly made it very clear that he wanted no part of it? I mean, he walked the other end of the podium. And, don't you bring that near me. Yeah.
He wasn't having anything to do with that. Right. That was hilarious. Yeah. Anything else about Canada? It's not a terribly exciting race. Just a few things happened in it worth noting, as we just did. So.
Yeah. No. I think the one we really want to talk about is the next one.
Is the next one. Oh, man, if you folks haven't seen this one, and I don't know why you would be listening to this show if you haven't watched it, but good heavens, but Baku, the Azerbaijan Grand Prix, it was the European Grand Prix last year when it was kind of generic, let's try it out. And I think the consensus was that the whole Formula One community was pretty excited that they had done a very good job with it. I mean, if you have enough oil money, right, you can do a pretty good job of almost anything. And so they got their own race starting this year. And it's a weird hybrid race because part of the race is like open streets and part of it makes Monaco look like the Indy 500.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to be split between the old city and the new city, and the bit between is those two alleyways that you were talking about earlier. If you look at the track map, it's strange. You've got this nice square bit, and then you've got sort of this little squiggly bit, and then this just basically thin line that connects them. It's a very strange track. I think what happened this year is what everybody expected last year. With the first time, and it actually last year was quite a boring race, but this year was anything but boring.
No. This year was it was insane. So let's talk a little bit about this race. How did it play out as far as what you want to mention about it, and then I'll throw a few things in.
Oh wow, how did this one play out?
Hamilton was on the pole, right? And he was supposed to do well. And then you had the two Finns behind him, Bottas, Raikkonen, and Vettel. So the usual suspects, the big four, were up there at the top, followed by Max Verstappen, with Ricciardo way down, interestingly, in 10th. Now, that's worth noting, is that Ricciardo started in 10th. Okay, he barely even made it into qualifying three. What happened to Hamilton that dropped him down to fifth? Because I can't remember. Did he have a... Vettel. Go ahead.
Yeah, so there was the whole... there was a whole bunch of things that happened to bring out the safety cars.
Yes.
The safety car. And then they red flagged the race.
Yeah.
To get rid of... To pick up some of the debris. And then...
The carnage.
Well, they red... Yeah, so we'll get back to that. But then when they were in the pits, all the drivers got out of their cars.
Uh-huh.
And then when Hamilton got back in, it looks like they didn't connect the headrest properly.
Right.
So even though he was out front, the headrest started to come up. And I loved it. The team was asking him to, can you push it back
push
down
it
while
back
you're on the straight? Can you drive one-handed 200 mile an hour and try and fix your car with the other hand? and then it was like, can you headbutt? That use the back of your helmet to push it back into position.
that's great.
And you could actually see on the on the TV when he was getting up to speed and the air was getting under the headrest or the soft foam surround that goes around their head. You could see it starting to lift and he's getting his hand and he's pushing it, trying to push it down and whack it with the back of his helmet. So in the end, they just basically said it's no good. This thing's a safety issue. You've got to pit. So he had to come in and pit. And get it changed and refastened. And I think when he came out in fifth behind Vettel, who had a 10-second stop and go for basically punting Hamilton up the back.
All right, hold on. Let's talk about that. Now, they're under the safety car, and Hamilton is in first. This is before the foam rubber headrest thing. So Hamilton's in first, Vettel's in second. These two are going at it. They want, Vettel wants to take a shot, get around Hamilton because the world championship is on the line out there in the future. And so as soon as they go around one of those tight turns, Hamilton, I don't care what the telemetry showed, it lies. There's lies, damn lies, and statistics. Lewis Hamilton, I don't know if he slammed on his brakes, but he definitely slowed way down on that blind curve. So here comes Vettel in second around that curve and just runs all up Hamilton's back end because Hamilton's basically just sitting there. And of course, Vettel gonna Vettel, right? Vettel's like, hey, what are you doing? What are you doing? He's waving his arms. He always does his little chicken fighting arm waving. And so then he drives up to the left of Hamilton's car, waving at him and doing his little, hey, what are you doing? And you can't see his right hand from the camera. The camera's on the left side of the car. So it looks like he's waving his arms and his car just magically veers over and the wheels bang into the wheels of Hamilton, who then freaks out. But you got to assume he's got his left hand up waving, but his right hand had to be on the steering wheel, right?
Yeah. I'll disagree with you on the Hamilton thing, but we'll come back to that in a second.
Okay, all right. So then, let me play out my scenario, and then you correct me. So then, as they get restarted again, Vettel is told, this is just priceless. The Ferrari people are like, to Sebastian, you need to come in and do a 10-second, in the box, 10-second penalty for unsafe driving. And Vettel's response is, how did I unsafe drive?
Yeah. What did I do?
What did I do unsafe? And the guys on the NBC are like, you know what you did, lad. You know what?
Yeah, we'll talk about it after the race. Just come and do it.
But he was still in denial because, you know, when Will Buxton went to talk to him after the race, and bless his heart, we'll go back to it, but I want to just kind of finish this thread out. Buxton talks to him after the race, and Vettel was extremely reluctant to even talk to the press. But Will Buxton was persistent and got up there to him and said, you know, was it deliberate? Obviously it was. Was it deliberate when you hit him? And he says, you mean when I ran into the back of him because he wasn't moving or whatever? And he's like, no, when you went up next to him and hit him. And he's like, well, you mean was it unsafe because he was driving too slow or whatever? He just couldn't go there. Alan, he was in complete denial.
It was like, yeah, it was like he blocked out that action. Like there was no memory of what he'd done.
Right. Okay. So lay out your scenario of it and help us here.
Okay. So this was the second restart behind the safety car. They'd already done one.
Yes.
The guy behind the safety car, excuse me, the guy at the head of the pack has the right to pace the field. Once the lights go off on the safety car, they don't have to maintain a certain distance. They don't have to maintain a certain speed. That's the rules. He can slow the field down as much as he wants.
Okay.
And quite often the guys at the front will do that. They will slow the field down so that nobody knows that when they're going to put the foot down. Because if he slows the field down, everybody else is backing off, then he can put his foot down and hammer it away and open up a large gap to avoid getting jumped by the guys behind. That's standard operating procedure for a restart. If you're the guy up front, that's the advantage you've got. Hamilton, actually, in the first restart, was a little too close to the safety car. He actually got a message around that when you jumped, it was a little too close to the safety car. So Ferrari should have been aware of that. It came over the radio. So there was, you know, a fair chance that he was actually going to slow down even more this time to open up the gap more. He didn't touch the brakes. There was no telemetry that he touched the brakes. He actually went through that corner at the same speed that lap as he did on the previous restart. He just did. He just backed up more before that to open up the gap to the safety car. And it's Vettel's job as the guy in second place to be aware that the guy in front is going to slow down. They all do it. Vettel is actually a past master at doing it. So basically, he had something that he does himself played on him, and it just caught him unawares, and he tapped the back of the Mercedes. And as in a road accident, if you get hit from behind, it's the fault of the guy behind for not keeping an eye on the traffic flow. So he didn't brake check him. He didn't do anything different that restart than he had in the others, other than maybe backed off a little earlier. But he only backed off once the lights went off the safety car, so he didn't break any rules. He played the game. Vettel got caught out, and as you said, Vettel got caught out and the red mist came down. And what the hell he thought when he, you know.
Yeah.
You don't come alongside another car and make basically turn your car into a weapon. To me it looked like he deliberately turned in. I've heard things like, oh, we were so busy waving his arms, the car just veered right. But I'm with you. I think he deliberately turned into bang wheels. And then the plausible deniability afterwards until he actually got called up in front of the tribunal in Paris was quite amusing to watch. But unfortunately, I think the whole thing got blown out of all proportion. But it was good fun, and it was certainly one of those what the hell moments that will be on the highlight reels for years to come. So,
Alan, here's the thing about it for me. Lewis Hamilton is a master of the mind game. He's like up there with Michael Jordan and some of the greats in athletics that are not just physically skilled and mentally skilled at doing their thing, they're very skilled at messing up your thing, okay? And what happened is that Vettel let himself be played. No matter, you're right, that Hamilton had the right to do whatever he wanted there, and he did. But Vettel should have just backed off again and complained like he always does. And if anybody, you know, it then would have been, well, was it Lewis? Was it Vettel? Maybe Lewis wasn't going fast enough. Maybe Vettel should have been paying more attention. Who knows? But it would have been kind of a little gray. What Vettel did was take something that he could have plausibly at least partly blamed on Hamilton and make it all about him doing something wrong. And that's where Vettel went wrong. And I'm saying, Hamilton spent all of 2016 trying to do that kind of crap to Nico Rosberg, and Rosberg a few times let it get to him. But Rosberg went to his Zen happy place and won that world championship last year by in the second half of the season, refusing to let Lewis take him where Lewis wanted to take him mentally. That's what Rosberg kept saying over and over at the end of last season. He said, you know, it was all mental, right? He said, I had to go to that placid, calm place. It was all mental. I knew exactly what he meant. And Vettel, I don't think, can do that. Vettel doesn't have, I don't think, the mental discipline to not let Hamilton egg him on and make him make a mistake. And you know what? Hamilton knows it, and he admitted it on camera. Did you see that interview?
I was actually just going to say, did you see the interview when somebody said something along the lines of, you know what Vettel's weak points are? One's his temper, and he was like, yeah.
That's one of them.
Well, that's one of them. And the interviewer was like, well, what's the other? He's like, I'm not going to tell you what the others are.
Yeah, I keep that
one. That's for me to exploit. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Hamilton is so good. He's an evil genius at this kind of thing. And so, I mean, he's the guy I love to root against because I like to see somebody actually overcome what he's doing to him. And I thought, I was just so happy, as you know, last season, because my guy from the beginning was Nico. And Nico let him get to him a few times, in Spain notably, right? Yep. Although it kind of backfired on Lewis a little bit. He took him out too. But ultimately, he was able to get fast. So this was a fascinating race. What other things happened? I mean, didn't Max had another, oil pressure failure on lap 12. I'm just looking at it right now.
Yeah. We started off with Bottas bouncing off the curbs and damaging Raikkonen's car. So Bottas ended up a lap down, but still ended up second.
I don't know about that. Love Raikkonen. We do Raikkonen imitations in my house now. Anytime anybody asks something in Raikkonen voice, we just go, I don't know about that.
So yeah. Those two have a fun relationship. The two Finnish guys, really do not like each other.
They don't really seem. There's no national pride thing there. They just don't really seem. And how can anybody not like? I mean, I can understand. All right, let me rephrase that. I can understand not liking Valtteri Bottas. I just can't understand disliking him. Valtteri Bottas is a white bowl of vanilla ice cream with no sauce or anything on it.
Yep.
How can you? I mean, he's just bland. He's a loaf of white bread. His uniform is white.
White bread.
His hair is basically white. His skin is pasty white. He is bland, bland, bland. And how can you? I mean, there's nothing there to love, really, unless you're, I guess, from Finland. But there's nothing really there to dislike. What can Kimi? I mean, he's the Iceman. Kimi's not the Iceman.
Yeah, if you listen to the radio, Kimi is actually anything that other than the Iceman. He's so, I don't know, on the radio, he's full of passion and complaining and stuff. Yeah, and then he gets out of the car and it's nothing. He just,
And when he gets on the podium, it's funny. Everybody else is like talking, congratulating, pouring champagne. He's just sitting there. I was telling my wife, I mean, I said, Raikkonen finishes like third or whatever in a race. And he looks like he's in the waiting room waiting for a dentist appointment.
Yeah, he looked so uncomfortable on the podium at Silverstone. It was my daughter and I were laughing about it because he was like, I just want to be somewhere else.
He
I don't want to be here.
Doesn't remotely care. I mean, there was one podium, we've already done it or we're going to get to it. There was one podium where you could understand he wasn't thrilled because the other two guys kind of came up to their places. He felt like he got knocked down to his. I think he finished maybe second or something and thought he should have won. I can't remember now. We'll get to it. But that one I understood. But there was nothing about – I mean, at the one you just mentioned in Silverstone, he was lucky to be on the podium.
Yeah. Yeah. He was lucky to finish the race.
Yes, so, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So I'm like, dude, I mean, I can understand the first one, but not the second one. So there's got to be more stuff we're missing about this race because this was just an absolutely insane race.
We
talk about who won.
The Two Force Indias, they took each other out following that little.
Yeah.
I remember Ocon went around the outside of Perez and pushed him into the wall. They ended up taking each other out.
Because they were in a position where when Vettel and Hamilton went out, they actually could have challenged to finish first or second, one of them or both.
And then it was Massa was in a position to potentially win, and then he lost the rear damper. And then was it one of the Haas cars? Kevin Magnussen was way up there at one point.
For a minute.
He was looking like he was heading for a podium.
Yeah, for a minute, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when you can say that there was a Formula One race where Felipe Massa, the two Force India guys, and Kevin Magnussen were all on clear paths for a podium, you know something weird was going on. That's just, I mean...
Yeah, and then there was Lance Stroll, who came through and looked like he was going to be second, except he got pipped on the line by, what was it?
Bottas. The vanilla ice cream.
Bottas. Yeah, who drove a storming race to come from one lap down to finish second, take second on the line. And it was literally on the line. I mean, it was like a tenth of a second. You have to wonder if Stroll was just lifted that slight bit as he saw the checkered flag, thinking, I've got this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just an involuntary lift, and Bottas just snuck it from him on the line. So.
And I did appreciate Bottas saying afterwards, he says, I'm glad I didn't knock him off the podium.
Yeah.
I thought that was cool. I thought that was a cool thing for him to say. And I'm glad he didn't, because that's the first time he's ever gotten on the podium. But, yeah, you know it's a weird race when Lance freaking Stroll is on the podium ahead of Vettel and Hamilton.
And the McLaren scored their first points. Alonso actually finished a race and finished in the points. So that tells you how weird it was.
Yeah. Yeah. How about that? And we didn't even mention it. And Daniel Ricciardo started 10th and went all the way up and won.
At one point, he was dead last because remember he came in because he had some of the debris from some of the early action caught in his brake duct.
Yeah.
Bring him in and clear the brake duct. So he was actually dead last at one point.
From last all the way up to first. Unbelievable. And so that was where we really got to see the major shoey drinking. Bottas started second and finished second, but like you say, he had a problem too, right? And he had to fight his way back up.
Yeah, he was a lap down at one point. So
And he had to fight his way all the way around the field and catch back up to pass Stroll at the very end. And then, of course, Vettel and Hamilton. And another thing we haven't really mentioned is that we talked about them crashing, and then Vettel had the 10-second penalty, and Hamilton had the headrest thing. And here's what happened. They happened fairly close together, and it ended up taking Hamilton. I'm just going to say it probably took Hamilton like 11 seconds maybe to fix the headrest because Vettel comes out. Vettel comes around. I believe Hamilton was in front before all that happened. Yeah, obviously Hamilton was in front, and when Hamilton came out of the pit for getting the headrest fixed, which was after the 10-second penalty for Vettel, Vettel was just ahead of him. And that's when Hamilton got all bent out of shape again, because he said a 10-second penalty is not enough. What he means is him getting to be ahead of me now is not right. And I understand that. I'm not mocking Hamilton believing that. I think that that's true, that the way it played out, Hamilton should have finished ahead of Vettel just because of how it played out, but it didn't.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I agree with a lot of people that a 10-second penalty was ridiculous for that offense. So he should have been parked immediately. He should have been black flagged and parked for dangerous driving like that.
What would he have said if that had happened? What is this for?
Why are you doing that? Yeah.
What is this for? What have I done?
Insane. Obviously, Hamilton, you know, anything over a 12-second penalty would have been good enough. But when you consider the other penalties, the other one. Oh, the other one that got me there was the fact that the Ferrari team and one of the other teams put broken cars together during the red flag and actually got them out. They rebuilt Kimi Raikkonen's car basically in the garage during the red flag area. And God, and I don't know if you noticed this, but when they wheeled it to the end of the pit lane to go out, they'd forgotten to put the steering wheel in.
No, I didn't. I thought he got a penalty for. Didn't he do too much work on it during a red flag or something?
Yeah, that was where I was getting to. Was I actually didn't like that even though the teams worked really hard and got the cars out.
Yeah.
Back out in the field and that they then got a ridiculous penalty for doing too much work in the garage when they, you know, really, really worked really hard to sort of basically rebuild two cars and get them back out there.
That's
so I think that was a ridiculous penalty, and that's another rule I think that needs looking at. They need to change that, because just giving them the opportunity to get competitive cars back out on track, I think makes for a much better show.
So. Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's go on to the Red Bull Ring in Austria. And this one wasn't terribly exciting. Of course, after that one, nothing's ever going to be exciting again, I'm afraid. But this is a race where Valtteri Bottas dominated. He was the top qualifying car. In fact, Lewis Hamilton qualified third. And Bottas ended up winning. I never have known exactly how to pronounce that. And Bottas ended up winning. And he pretty much came in the same order with one exception. It was Bottas, Vettel, Hamilton qualifying. And it was Bottas, Vettel, Ricardo, Hamilton finishing. Remind us all what happened to, because I honestly don't remember, what happened to Lewis Hamilton in this race that caused him to get behind, and then he was really catching up with Ricardo for third place at the end, and Ricardo was very, very excited to hold him off to get on the podium.
Well, again, talking of ridiculous rules, there's another one I don't like. It's this five-place grid penalty for changing your gearbox, which Hamilton had... Mercedes team had changed Hamilton's gearbox, so it didn't matter where he qualified, he had to move down five spots. So we ended up starting eighth.
Right, okay. He didn't list that on the thing I'm looking at, and I forget, so that made me forget about it.
And he raced his way up to fourth, which doesn't sound that much, but actually on a small, tight circuit like that is pretty good.
Yeah.
And I think if as he let everybody know at the end of the race, he was actually the fastest guy out there. If you look at the lap times and the sector times, he was actually the fastest guy on track all day. He raced up. I think one of the things there was the tires, because I think they were thrown by the tires, because I think before the race, Pirelli were like, oh, you know, the tires are good, that you could probably do the full distance on the tires. Even the ultra softs, you know, you can go almost full race distance. And then it was actually very hot for Austria. The tires actually started to degrade pretty quickly and blister, and everybody was sort of nursing their tires until the end, when it was like, well, it doesn't matter, you can just go hell for leather now.
Right.
And that's when Hamilton started catching Ricardo, and Vettel started catching Bottas.
Vettel was catching up to Bottas toward the end. That's right.
Yeah, and I think it was a sort of similar, you know, like half a second gap between Bottas and Vettel, and half a second between Ricardo and Hamilton at the end. And Vettel said if he'd had another two laps, he'd have had him. And Bottas, I think, said the same thing, that if he'd been two laps longer, he couldn't have held on.
Yeah.
Normally there's pretty good racing at the Austrian Grand Prix, with it being a short lap time and a fairly tight track and sort of more of a natural amphitheater, but it was a fairly uninspiring race this year up until those sort of last 10 laps or so, when everybody just threw caution to the wind with the tires and just started to go for it.
Yeah, this was a race that was pretty dull right up until the last couple of laps, I remember. The other thing that stands out to me about this race is that this is the one where all the way through qualifying and into the race, they kept running wide and hitting those the markers that were like...
the curbs. I'd forgotten about those. You're right. Yeah, I mean, I don't remember the commentary. They were basically saying that during qualifying, I think it wasn't free practice, they were actually breaking the legality plank underneath the cars with that. The curbs were so high and serrated that they were causing massive amounts of damage to the undersides of the cars.
Yeah, and that's Red Bull's home track. I mean, if anything, it should be right up to spec, you'd think. I don't know what the deal was.
I think if I remember rightly, they said they'd actually had the problem last year and it didn't seem to have been addressed. You could hear it. You're right. It's like when you hit the you doze off slightly at the wheel, or you sort of drift on the freeway and you go into the side of the road there where they have the corrugations to make you go.
That's right.
You could hear that as they went over the over some of the curbing.
Absolutely.
Which was crazy. Yeah.
This is another one too where Max Verstappen, who's the guy I'm cheering for this year. Well, I have to say, by the way, as a quick aside, with all the stuff around the Indianapolis 500, I got to know Fernando Alonso a lot better. So he is now my co-favorite driver, along with Max Verstappen. So, well, they both finished 19th and 20th in this race. They didn't even finish. They both were out immediately. And I was just like, ugh.
But it wasn't their fault. They got taken out by one of the Toro Rosso cars.
It wasn't the Russian torpedo, was it?
Yes, it was. It was Danny Kvyat.
You got to think Kvyat's on his way to bumper cars. That was what Vettel was saying about Max. But Yeah. Kvyat has already been demoted once down to Toro Rosso. Surely, I mean, I would not want him. I feel like Toro Rosso needs to have two new drivers next year because Sainz wants to go up and let him take a shot, and Kvyat, I wouldn't have him driving for my team. I just wouldn't. He's a hazard, it seems like.
Yeah, especially in the last four or five races, he's just you become a human torpedo, like you said. He's either taken out his teammate or scared his teammate into spinning, or he's hit other people and caused multiple accidents. Yeah, it's very strange. He seems to be trying to ruin his career, and he's doing a good job.
He really is. Yeah, I would not take him. This wasn't a very memorable race. Anything else of note about Austria? That's what I was going to say, is that Max didn't even finish the first lap, and that was disappointing, not just to me, but to all the fans, because there were a whole lot of Dutch fans there in Austria to see him, and they didn't even get a lap out of him. I mean, some of them, you know, along the track, never even saw him once in action.
Right, yeah.
Unbelievable.
But he was I can't remember. I don't have it up in front of me. He qualified well, though, didn't he?
Sixth. He was actually behind Ricardo, yeah.
Oh, okay, not that good then. All right.
So, yeah, you had Mercedes-Ferrari, and then Ricciardo and Verstappen.
Okay.
So he was the bottom of the top six, basically, the bottom of the six contenders. I'm going to ask you about the overall situation when we get to the end. We've got one more to go. Let's go to Silverstone, as they say. This was the British Grand Prix, and you just knew. I mean, come on. We all knew what was going to happen. And it sure did, which is Hamilton dominated it from start to finish. He dominated. As I love David Hobbs on the NBC Sports Network saying, he always like, he's on a flyer. It's either Hobbs or the other guy. I forget the other guy. I really
Steve
love
Matchett.
Yeah, I love all four of the guys that they have on there. The three on in the studio, and then the guy out in the paddock. And they really do, I think, do a very good job from my limited experience. And I like it. He'll say, Lewis Hamilton is an absolute flyer. And I'm like, oh, here we go. And sure enough, he put in in fact, let me see if I got the time. Yeah, everybody else was turning in 127s, 128s, and he did a 126.
Yeah, it was half a second quicker
than Raikkonen,
which was, staggering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Raikkonen's a very good qualifying driver. He doesn't do so great in races, does he? But he's a very good qualifier.
He's always been good at Silverstone too. That sort of wide open, fast flowing track seems to suit his style. He's always done well there.
And he did finish third in this one, behind the two Mercedes. So this was a race where we actually had the two Red Bulls both made it to the end.
Yeah, although Verstappen almost didn't again because he had the same tire problem that hit the two Ferraris, but they pulled him in and put tires on him and got him back out there, so he came fourth.
He was like 20 seconds behind Raikkonen, and he was like 10 seconds ahead of Ricciardo, and they're like, look, you know, we're going to pull you in and change your tires because it's not like you're going to lose a spot, and it's not like you could make up a spot. All you could really do is blow out and not finish. So they brought him in, changed his tires. He did not change his position by doing that. So there was really no there was no downside to it, only upside. What was crazy, though, was that Vettel and Raikkonen both had the same issue consecutively toward the end of the race.
Right, Verstappen was showing the same things, and I understand that Hülkenberg in the Renault, after he parked at the end of the race, basically he didn't do a cooling down lap because his tire wouldn't have made it.
Wow.
So there was like four of them that had the issue, but it just happened that the two Ferraris were the first ones and the most spectacular ones. I don't think Vettel did himself any favors by trying to drive back at the speed he did and basically shredded the tire, which then flailed half the bodywork off the car as it went round. But it was strange. I mean, you could see Raikkonen start to delaminate as he was going around. You could start seeing the carcass flick up and stuff. It was a very strange failure to see. But to the point, he got into the pits, he got some fresh tires, and he got out and he got back. He was finished on the podium when, I didn't think he'd finish at all. I thought he'd be in the pits and done. So why he was so miserable on the podium, I do not know.
Don't know, right. Well, that was the thing, is that he was there and Vettel was behind him. And it looked like he was going to finish third. Vettel was going to finish fourth, I believe. And then because Vettel and Verstappen had been battling for fourth pretty much the whole race, which was very entertaining. And then what happened was that Vettel had the problem with the tire first. And Raikkonen had the tire had the problem with the tire first, and Vettel got to go up to third, and Raikkonen drops down to fourth or whatever, and you're thinking, you know, well, that just sucks for Kimi. And then the exact same thing happens to Vettel, but worse, at a worse place on the track and in worse condition, which puts Kimi back up to third. So basically they leapfrogged each other, you know, back and forth. It just worked out to Kimi Raikkonen's advantage in how it played out.
Exactly, yeah. 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 So.
And that left the two Red Bulls right behind.
And then we have Ricciardo. Yeah, with Daniel Ricciardo, another sterling drive up to fifth from the last place on the grid.
19th, yeah.
Yeah, 19th.
Pretty amazing.
So, yeah, great drive. Another good, steady, strong drive and, you know, capitalizing on everybody else. The guy I actually felt really sorry for on Sunday at the British Grand Prix was Julian Palmer. I think this was his. He was the only other British driver. There was only the two British drivers in the race, Hamilton and Palmer. And I think it was his last chance to prove that he should stay in that seat at Renault. And then the car didn't even make it through the formation lap, and he didn't even get to start the race. So I think he's. I wouldn't be surprised that he doesn't come back after the summer break. I think he's gone. So.
Yeah, it's interesting. Oh, even before the end of the season. Wow.
Yep. Yep.
Who would they bring in?
I actually think, and this probably name's not going to mean much to you, but I actually think they're going to bring Robert Kubica back in. I don't know if you know his story, but he, in the early 2000s, he was the rising star, the next potential world champion. He drove for BMW Sauber, and when the Sauber was a strong team, and for Renault. And then he had in the off season, he went rallying and had a horrible accident, which nearly amputated his right arm. An Armco barrier came into the car and basically threw his arm and basically half amputated his arm in the car.
Wow.
And he's been coming back and doing more rallying and driven a GP3 car and GP2 car, and he's done testing in the Renault simulator this year, and he's done two tests for Renault. There's a lot of rumors that he could be in the car next year, and I think he might actually even be in it this year just to see if he can run a full Grand Prix distance. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him in the car at Spa. I may be proved wrong, but I wouldn't be surprised. It would be an amazing comeback if he does, because he said he was clinically dead in his one point during that accident.
Wow.
And he has always said that he wants to come back. And from what I hear, he has lost none of his speed. He's doing competitive times in the testing. And he's doing, I think the last test, he actually clocked quicker times than Nico Hülkenberg. He was like in the Max Verstappen class. He was always considered to be one of the potential future stars of F1 until he had his accident. So it'll be interesting to see if he does come back. Wow. If he's going to be as competitive as everybody thinks he's going to be. So,
well, you know, I was just going to say the interesting thing to me, I haven't in the year and a half I've been watching now, I haven't really seen a bad accident. In fact, I'll tell you the thing I've seen, the two things I've seen that looked the worst. One of them was early on last year when the cars went flying. There was one where a car actually like went flying off the ground. They use it in the opening title sequence now.
Oh, Alonso in Australia, where the car impacted and then like concertina down, and he just climbed out of the cockpit and like he brushed himself off and walked away.
Yeah, that one, and then Monaco this year when was it Stroll that was horizontal or vertical or whatever up against the wall. Verline, yeah. Those are the two worst things. And that wasn't even bad. It was a weird place to see a car stuck to the wall backwards, upside down or whatever. But those are the two worst things I've seen. So I hear about all these horrible accidents and people getting killed and amputated and stuff, but I haven't seen anything, you know, in these two seasons yet. Are they just safer now, or have I just not seen anything happen yet?
No, they are incredibly safe now. I mean, some of the accidents you have now, people would never have walked away from before. Okay. The car, I mean, Kubica's accident was in rallying, not in an F1 car, but F1 cars are incredibly safe now, which is actually to some extent led to some of the bad driving practices because there's no consequences of doing naughty things.
Wow.
You know, you would never, you know, the stunt that Vettel pulled, you would never have done it, you know, a couple of decades previously. Yeah. So, but yeah, there hasn't been, other than, you know, a freak accident with Jules Bianchi a couple of seasons ago, probably more than a few seasons ago now, you wouldn't have, where he actually, he went underneath one of the track side recovery vehicles. Yeah, it's been a long, long time since there's been a major death on track. So I know you and I were sort of doing stuff on Twitter earlier on about the cockpit protection and why they're looking at it. And I put down a string of names, but actually those string of names were sort of not just F1, but accidents that have happened in IndyCar and F2 as well. So the accidents that happen these days, thankfully, are very, very rare. And really, the major danger at the moment is the fact that because they're open cockpit racing series, is debris striking somebody on the head has been the sort of the major area of concern over the last few years. So,
and that's why the Ferrari car was doing the little canopy experiment, right?
At Silverstone, yeah. And that's like the third. Yeah, that's like the third option that they've tried. Okay. And I noticed that there's been a few things. IndyCar are doing a similar stuff, but they tend to be doing it behind closed doors at research facilities, not at the races, while F1 are sort of trying them out, using the practice sessions to try stuff out. So both F1 and IndyCar are looking at sort of how do you do the cockpit protection, but actually keep the spirit of the series of it being an open wheel, open cockpit racing series. So
right.
But yeah, F1 is so much safer these days than it used to be.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything to the level of Scott Dixon at Indianapolis. He's quite a John Wayne cowboy type, but he just walked away from that like he'd backed into a mailbox or something, you know.
I don't know if you heard the interview with Alonso when they asked him about that.
I'm not sure.
And he said he came around the corner and he sort of, there was an engine and a gearbox in the middle of the road, and he's like, I couldn't see where the rest of the car was. And he said it was like three laps before I actually realized everybody was like okay, because I just thought the front of the car had like disintegrated. So it was an amazing accident, and again shows how safe and strong the modern race cars really are.
Well, that gets us through the four races at Formula One. And before we take a quick little break and then do some, just a real quick look at Indy, because we've got six Indy races, but I just want to touch on a couple highlights. I want to get your kind of overall kind of bird's eye view of, you know, we're at the halfway point of the season. We've had 10 races down, 10 to go. We got the Hungaroring coming up, I guess, in a week or a few days, right?
Yep.
But we're at the halfway point. I'm gonna run a scenario by you, and you tell me if I'm right or wrong and where you think it's going. I think that at the beginning of the year, Ferrari had things figured out slightly better than Mercedes, but I feel like somewhere along the line, Mercedes has figured it out, and there's been a combination of that and the tracks favoring Mercedes more. And I don't think we're going to see Vettel win more than two more races, three more races the rest of the way. I think Hamilton and Bottas are going to both win more races than Vettel does the rest of the way. And I think the championship is Hamilton's to lose. What do you say to that?
I would say Hamilton is definitely in the driver's, pardon the pun, in the driver's seat at the moment. Mm-hmm. After Silverstone is, what, he's 1 point behind Vettel now. Hungaroring is another another strong Hamilton track. We've got Singapore coming out. That's another one of his favorites. I can see Hamilton winning several more. I can see Bottas winning more. The interesting thing is, for the four races we've just discussed, Bottas is actually the top scorer across those four races. I'm just looking for the last four races. It's Bottas, Hamilton, Ricciardo, and Vettel in terms of point scoring over those four races. So,
And Bottas is catching up to Hamilton a little bit. At least he was.
So that could be interesting. I think if Bottas wins one or two more, it's going to be interesting as to where that puts Mercedes. Will they throw everything behind Hamilton? Will they let them fight it out? Mm-hmm. And the problem is, you know, historically when teams have done that and let two drivers fight it out, somebody from another team has snuck in because they keep taking points off each other. So, you know, if they do that, that could favor Vettel. But if they stick with, you know, Bottas being the clear number two and everything goes behind Hamilton, I think you're right. At this moment, it's Hamilton's to lose. But as we saw last year, we're only halfway through and the championship can swing either way. And with having a third player in the mix with Bottas, I think it's going to get very interesting as to where it goes over the next 10 races.
Well, about at this position, it feels like Hamilton finishes stronger. At this position last year, Nico Rosberg had won a bunch of early races and had a pretty good padding, and he ended up needing every millimeter of that padding in the second half of the season. Sebastian Vettel's padding right now is 1 point.
Yeah.
That's not good.
And I think we touched on it earlier. Vettel doesn't handle the pressure as well. I think Hamilton's going to find, despite the fact that they keep saying they respect each other and it's nice to be fighting with somebody from another team, I think Hamilton's going to like Vettel's blue touch paper and retreat in a distance and watch him explode a couple of times. I don't know how he's going to do it. I'm pretty sure he's going to play a few more mind games with him.
Yep. Isn't it interesting, before the British Grand Prix, the previous four, Monaco, Canada, Baku, and Austria, in those four you had four different winners. That's pretty rare lately in Formula One, isn't it? Four winners in four races?
It is, very much so, yes. Yeah, which is great to see. It's good to see an open season. I'm hoping that Verstappen will sneak one victory in there at some point between now and the end of the season.
I believe last year we had Ricciardo 1-1, Verstappen 1-1. Everything else was Rosberg and Hamilton, right?
Yeah.
So this year we've already had four different winners, and we're just now to the halfway point. So, do you think Raikkonen can win one before the season's over? Or is it going to be pretty much Hamilton, Hamilton, Bottas, Hamilton, Hamilton, Bottas, Vettel, Hamilton, Hamilton, Bottas the rest of the way?
No, I can say I think Ricciardo and Verstappen might get a couple in. Red Bull seem to be coming on stronger.
I hope so.
I hope. I don't think Raikkonen's going to win one. He just doesn't have that killer instinct anymore. You know, if he was going to win anything, he should have won at Monaco. That would have been great for him to see, because that pole lap he put in was wonderful. But yeah, I don't think he's going to do it.
Well, I don't think so. it's just fun to do. I imitate Gus Malzahn on the football show, and I imitate Kimi Raikkonen on the racing show. Let me just take a quick moment to thank our sponsors at Patreon, because you guys keep us on the air. We've added a couple more lately. In fact, let me, as I always do, run through our list of people to thank. We always thank Nicholas Cottrell up front. We have our newest patron, Chris Thrash. Recently, we added Phil Amthor of WeHaveDonuts.com. Very nice. Very good. And then, of course, David Medinas, Mark Squire, Dave Powell, Jared Albrick, Rich Reimer, Michael Kirshner, Bill Matthews, Joey Miller, and Matthew Wagstaff. So all you guys are very, very much appreciated, and we hope to keep adding people. So just go to patreon.com/VanAllenPlexico, or you can just go to patreon.com and search for Van Plexico. And it's basically the White Rocket account, where our network brings in whatever support funding. We're like the PBS of podcasting. We rely on people like you. We don't get a government grant. We rely on people like you who enjoy our shows to keep us going. And we appreciate all our listeners, because, Alan, I don't know if you know him, but, our Auburn football show gets a lot of listeners, obviously, has a built-in audience. And our pop culture shows, get several hundred an episode right off the bat. This show's been doing pretty darn well, too. I'm very
That's
pleased. I thought we would get three or four for a while, but no, we've been doing all right.
That's nice to know. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and tell all your friends.
We appreciate it. I don't know if you heard it, but Jared on our James Bond show, or one of the shows, I think we were doing a Quantum Leap show the other day, and Jared was imitating you. And he was doing his best.
To go back and listen to it.
He was doing a terrible British accent, but he was doing you, and he was talking about, we're here to talk about the best of open wheel racing. I'm like, no, Jared, we're here to talk about, Quantum Leap or whatever. He's like, I thought I was Alan for a second. But he said he really enjoys listening to the show. He says, I know nothing about it. I just like hearing you guys talk about it. And that's good. That means that, even if it's not even if the subject matter isn't appealing, maybe there's something about our wacky banter with each other that people find appealing. And that's good, I guess. So
Which, isn't that what the guys at Side Podcast also mentioned, that when they put us on their listing, that we had great voices? I thought that was... I'm not sure if that was a backhanded compliment or not. But,
yeah, okay. Well, I'll take it.
Yeah.
I'll take it. Very good.
Well,
let's see. We talked about the Indy 500. I just want to zip right quick through in our last few minutes through Indy. Nowhere near the depth we do on Formula One, but we have a kind of touch base on it. There was the cool Duel, D-U-A-L, in Detroit at Belle Isle. And the only thing I remember about that race, because I don't like the track. The track is like is very constrictive, and there's lots of high walls and everything. And the thing I remember about it was that a driver I don't particularly love to root for, Graham Rahal. There's nothing wrong with him. I'm just not a Rahal type guy. Rahal Letterman. He ended up winning both of them, which was pretty rare. Any thoughts about that race, just real fast?
To be honest, I didn't actually watch it, so I've only watched the highlights. I'm not sure why I didn't watch it, but I didn't.
And there were two. I failed to say two.
It's not a must-watch race for me. It's going to sound stupid. It seems to be more of a more artificial track than most of the other street circuits, though it is wide. I do remember watching the highlights. There was a few times they were three wide coming down the straight there, which is pretty unusual for I think St. Pete's is the only other street circuit you sort of see that. Mm-hmm. I'm not a huge Rahal fan either, and again, I have no particular reason why I'm not. I don't know. You were talking about Bottas earlier. I find Rahal fairly bland,
right?
I was a big fan of his dad's, but I'm not. He doesn't sort of do anything for me with his driving style or anything like that. So, good to him. I think he was though. We were talking about the number of winners in Formula One, wasn't he? Like the seventh different winner of the season so far.
Yeah, it's been crazy. This series has been crazy. He had the pace. Yeah. It's weird. That's the thing about IndyCar that seems to me. There's a lot of things that are different, but the thing that really stands out in terms of just the winners and the racing in Formula One, it seems like at least for long stretches of seasons so far, from what I've been able to gather. One or two cars will have the speed, have the pace, and it stays that way for a while. IndyCar, it seems like every week a different car randomly steps up and is the fast car, and you just never know which one it's going to be. It's so weird.
Yeah, I mean, there was a time when, IndyCar was Penske and Ganassi, and it sort of bounced back and forwards between the two, but yeah, there seems to be a lot more strength and depth in the teams these days, which is great to see.
And it's just so random. I mean, it's like if in Formula One, one week Verline had easily the fastest car, and then the next week Ocon had the fastest car, and then another week, Rick Raikkonen had the fastest car, and you get a different winner every week almost, and it's just a different race every time. And then the different tracks, Well, I mean, I know the Formula One tracks are different, but they're different in kind of a similar way, whereas the Indy tracks are just literally completely different. You'll have oval, and then you'll have a road course, then you'll have an oval, then you'll have a downtown street course, then you'll have a little round oval, then you'll have a giant oval. I mean, it's just so completely different. The Texas oval, that one, yes. Did you see the Texas race?
Texas, yes.
Oh, my goodness.
We're talking about Baku being the one for F1 this season. I think Texas is going to be the craziest race for IndyCar this season.
Did you see how many cars finished the Texas race?
Yeah, was it seven?
Seven cars survived. They should have gotten T-shirts that said, I survived Texas Motor Speedway.
Yeah, I was actually, I had hoped to actually go to that race, but I was doing a book signing here in Austin that afternoon, and I couldn't actually work out the timing because it was a Saturday evening race. Mm-hmm. If it had been Sunday, we would have gone, but it was a Saturday evening race, and it's like by the time the book signing finished, we had a 2.5 hour window to make the 3 hours up to
Fort Worth,
the Texas Motor Speedway, and it's like, no, that's going to be a bit tight. But my wife and I had considered going up, and I sort of half wish we'd have made the effort now, because, and even if we'd have missed the first 10 or so laps, just to be there for the rest of the craziness. But
it was crazy. It was insane.
Yeah, but I spoke to a few people the following day at Circuit of the Americas at the Formula One watch party. I spoke to a few guys who'd actually been up at the IndyCar race, and they were telling me how absolute crazy it was. And, you know, a couple of accidents that took out, you know, five or six cars each accident. I mean, it's an amazing track to fast track to go watch a race at. I've been up there a few times, and it's a great track to watch a race. But that was just a crash fest. And not just, you know, what was that last one when Sato put his tires on the grass and then just spun out in front of everybody and like took out half the field. But thankfully nobody was hurt either.
Right.
You know, it was spectacular, but everybody came through it safe.
Just wave after wave of cars spinning and crashing and hitting the wall and everything. That was like a demolition derby. It was absolutely insane. And those ovals seem to be good for that. You don't get that so much on the road courses, but the ovals, you just get the carnage. So, and I think Fernando Alonso understood that. He was saying that he was like had a little trepidation about driving on a big fast oval like Indy because it was so different. But Road America, the Color Grand Prix in Wisconsin, that one is not particularly memorable to me. I don't remember much about that one.
I remember nothing about it. Isn't that horrible to say that? But I actually don't remember anything about it.
I'm going to say somebody won, and yay. This wasn't one that Scott Dixon finally won one, was it, maybe? I can't remember.
I'm just looking up. You're right. It was Scott Dixon, yes.
He was leading most of the season, but he never actually won a race. He was just pulling a kind of a Ricardo.
Yeah, right. He's always there or thereabouts, isn't he? But it was Scott Dixon won, yeah.
Well, the difference between him and Ricardo is that Ricardo's finishing, you know, second, third, but the same guys are in first and second ahead of him. In IndyCar, Dixon's finishing second, third, but it's a different guy ahead of him every time, so he had the points lead.
Right, yeah. But that was at Road America. That's another great circuit. That's a good natural...
Really pretty.
Pretty surrounding. Flowing road circuit, yeah.
Looks more like some of the European courses that are, you know, really landscaped and everything.
It is. It's one of the ones that comes up when we have the, you know, where else should you run a Formula One race in America? Road America is one of the tracks that quite often gets mentioned. But I think I'm not sure that Formula One would want to go all the way into Wisconsin. for a race.
Well, let's be honest. A fair number of the Indy tracks look pretty grungy. You know, the Formula One tracks look like you could eat off the asphalt a lot of the time. They're just immaculate, you know. And the IndyCar tracks really do look like, you know, Saturday night down home America. You know, they don't look like champagne and caviar like the Formula One tracks, which is why the Texas track that the Circuit of the Americas fits more with Formula One, because it's really nice and clean and sleek and new looking. It fits in with the others. I got to tell you, the track up here in Granite City, I think it fits right in with IndyCar. It's in a pretty rough part of town, man. Amy was just telling me the other day that they're going to do some of like the fan fest stuff over in St. Louis around the nice facilities over there. And I said, "Oh Lord!" Then they're going to come over for the race. And they're going to be like, "What? Where are we?" It's going to look like Beirut in the '80s, man. It's just Granite City is not, you know, no offense, Granite City, but it is on the list of the 50 worst places to live in America. Granite City, so it is. I've seen it. So,
yeah.
Let's get on through the last couple. Let's see. The Iowa Corn 300 is always fun because it's just a little round circle. And they just go, they do 300 laps on a 1 mile circle. It's so weird. It's like lap 20, lap 21, lap 22. You're like, you know, you're like you get up to go to the restroom, you come back, lap 40, lap 41. You're like, whoa, I just missed a third of the race. What the heck, you know? So what do you think about that one? It is a kind of a fun little different.
Yeah, it is a fun, you know, like you said, it's just like all the time. But I think the fun thing there was actually seeing Castro Neves win for the first time in 3 years.
Oh yeah,
that was great. I've always been a big fan of his. I love watching him race. And,
everybody loves
doing his Spider-Man impersonation at the end of the race, climbing up the fence there, and he did it the weekend that Spider-Man Homecoming opened as well. So
how about that? It was Elio Homecoming for winning.
Yeah.
That's cool.
It was great to see him back at the front again, you know, particularly after his strong showing at Indy, Indy 500 as well. You know, he's been there and thereabouts pretty much all this season, so it was good to see him get a win.
And speaking of Castro Neves, he started out really strong in the last one in Toronto the other day on Sunday. I guess it was either Saturday or Sunday. Sunday. Yeah, it was after the Formula One race. I got all confused because I recorded the Formula One race. I wasn't at home. And so I actually ended up watching the IndyCar race first and then watching the Formula One race that night. But he put a great move on Pagenaud at the beginning of that Toronto race, and you're thinking, look at Castro Neves is going to reestablish himself as a top driver, even as Penske's talking about demoting him to sports car training or something, right?
Oh yeah, I don't know about demoting, but yeah, it's just, I think semi-retirement or whatever. But yeah, moving him over to their new sports car program and basically being the senior driver coach on their new sports car team, which I think would actually be a good move for him. But yeah, that was a great move at the start of the race. For me, the interesting thing about the Toronto race was the fact I was actually in Toronto all last week on business, staying in the sort of the most touristy business part of downtown Toronto, and there was nothing promoting the IndyCar race. Not a sign, not a poster, not a sticker, nothing. In fact, I actually didn't actually realize it was on until the morning I went down for breakfast the last day I was in there, and all these Japanese folks in Takuma Sato shirts started coming in for breakfast. I was suddenly like, oh, it must be the IndyCar race this weekend. And if I'd have known that, I'd have stayed an extra couple of days and got tickets. But I was stunned that I'd actually managed to spend the whole week there and had no idea that the race was on.
That's amazing. It's not surprising in a way, but it's
zero promotion.
Wow. Yeah.
Which, when you compare to here in Austin, you know, they're already starting to, the posters for the F1 race are already starting to go up, and you know, they've been promoting it in local media and stuff pretty much since February, March time. It was just an interesting contrast, and very surprising. I thought Indy were missing a trick there.
That's too bad. Honestly, I'm not that surprised, just because, I mean, I feel like Indy was kind of at its height maybe in the late 70s, early 80s, and then they had their little civil war, and I dropped out. I lost interest because they were all over the map. You know, they were split into two different groups and everything, and I don't think they've ever come back from that, really. They're just now starting to. But I don't think they've ever recovered.
I think the Indy 500 is, you know, with it being the 100th one last year, and it was it was a full event, and then all the Alonso hype and all the interest around this year's. I think the Indy 500 is sort of getting back up there, and it's starting to sort of trickle down to the others. But you only have to watch the TV and see the number of folks that are not in the stands, the number of empty seats.
Yeah.
And it does make you wonder about the wider promotion of it. And again, I think it would help if they have if they actually had a recognizable American driver up front winning stuff who actually had some personality. Rahal, as we said before, doesn't really do anything for either of us. I think Newgarden doesn't. Everybody was thinking he'd be the next White Hope, but he doesn't seem to be doing much. He won on Sunday, but again, personality-wise, and I don't think he's that media savvy or friendly.
The one that has the most appealing media personality seems to me to be Hinchcliffe.
Yeah, 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 and he's Canadian, so with a British passport. So, I think they need need somebody like him, but an American. I don't know whether Alexander Rossi's going to be it. He's only been in IndyCar a couple of seasons. Maybe he could be it, but there doesn't just seem to be that personality that can hook like AJ Foyt or Johnny Rutherford or any of those sort of guys, or even the Unzers and the Andretti's or whatever. Just seems to be missing from the series these days.
Yeah, they just seem to kind of go about their business. They're a bunch of IndyCar has got like, out of 20 drivers or whatever, they've got like 17 Valtteri Bottases.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there are some really entertaining guys there, but I think you're losing some of the older entertaining guys like Castro Neves and Kanaan and stuff are not going to be around for much longer. Montoya's gone. Mm-hmm. A lot of the guys that had the personality are retiring or moving on. So they really need to nurture that and nurture the promotion side of it, I believe.
Well, there's only 5 races left to go, while Formula One is at the midpoint right now and coming up on the break. IndyCar has only got 5 races to go, one of which will be here in my neck of the woods. I'm very excited. So that season will be wrapping up the middle of September. It's crazy. So, and there's really nobody's kind of taking firm command of the points lead. It could it could come down to the last race.
Yeah, and it has for the last few seasons. And don't they do double points in the last race? Are they still doing that?
I'm not sure.
I know they did that like was it last year or the year before, and Montoya was annoyed because if it had been regular points, he'd have won the championship. But because it was double points, he didn't. Yeah. Right. But, yeah, and again, I don't think IndyCar helps themselves with this really short season that they seem to have to try and avoid conflict with other sports.
Yeah.
Because I think they draw a completely different crowd. For me, motor racing always seems to be, you know, should be, maybe it's just because of my European racing background, but to me, you know, racing for me is, you know, something that starts around March and finishes around October, November time, not this, you know, compressed season that IndyCar seems to have.
Yeah, there were like 5 of the races just within the space of maybe 2 Formula One races. I couldn't believe it. I remember that at one point after Indy, there was a very short period of time where we had a bunch of Indy races compared to how many Formula One. So, all right. Well, any last thoughts about either thing or what's coming up before we wrap up for tonight?
I think as we mentioned earlier, I actually think F1's sort of heading in a very interesting direction. I'm looking forward to the rest of the season. Obviously, we got a few races and then the break coming up. And then I think after the breaks is going to get very interesting with the run-up to the championship. I'd like to see it go into a 3-way fight. I think it's going to be interesting if Bottas can keep that up. I'm hoping that the Red Bulls can sneak in 1 or 2 more wins. And really looking forward to being trackside at Circuit of the Americas in October and seeing these guys fight it out in person. That'll be awesome.
There may be a car pull up next to you and Mira hops out after she's hitchhiked her way over there to see it. She's dying to get to Texas now. She's condescending to let me drag her to Madison, Illinois for the Bomarito, but she's turning up her nose big time. So,
oh, I am looking forward to hearing your thoughts on going to a live IndyCar race. That should be interesting.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be fun. All right. Well, we're going to get on out of here. Alan, tell the folks how to find you.
You can find me online at website is alanjporter.com, or you can find me on Twitter at Alan J. Porter.
And I'm on Twitter at Van Allen Plexico and Facebook as well. And, of course, don't forget to go to patreon.com and look me up there and help support the shows. All right. Well, that's going to do it for Open Wheel for this week. We'll be back in a few weeks to kind of do our next check-in, I suppose. Sound good?
Sounds great.
All right. Thanks, man. We'll see you down the road.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.